Welcome to What Is It About the Weather, where once a week we get together and explore the many ways that weather's intertwined into our everyday lives. I'm your host, Mark Chelinek, and this week we're going to try to answer the question, did weather save my life? But before we jump into the main topic, as always, let me take a moment to thank those of you who are supporting the podcast. Of course, there's particular appreciation for those of you helping us stay cost neutral in this process of creating this podcast. But it's appreciated the many ways in which you support the podcast, whether it's staying in touch with me, giving me ideas or feedback, whether it's taking the time to share the podcast with other folks, like somebody we mentioned last week. But I also had a nice gesture that can go a long way that wasn't particularly promoting a specific episode, which sometimes people do. But Kent from the Ritual Mystery Podcast, which you guys have heard me mention before, sent a very nice tweet last weekend that talked about how he was doing his Saturday morning ritual, which involved listening to the podcast. And, you know, just the fact that I was part of some tradition or some regular routine, it was nice to hear that. And, of course, in a broad sense, he was sharing the podcast. He was tweeting about it, which I welcome any of you to do. You can retweet what I tweet when I send out episode tweets. You can, you know, hit me up with a reply, whether it's the podcast or me in person. Again, whatever ways you guys are choosing to support the podcast, it is greatly appreciated. Now, how about your weather week? What was new? What was interesting? What was different? I had a few things this week. Now, one of them had to do with the stuff we talked about last week. No sooner had I posted things and got things up there that, I don't know, it was probably some search I did on Google, so it was probably one of those things that came up because of what I'd been looking into and weather movies and all that. But I saw a preview for Hurricane Heist, which I think is coming out in just a couple weeks. What was the tagline? 600 million in 600 mile an hour winds. Hurricane 600 mile an hour winds. I don't think we've quite gotten to that level yet. That'd be some pretty strong winds. Somebody I saw who did an initial review, again, based on just the trailer, I think, said something about how it felt very Sharknado-like. And I think I don't remember off the top of my head, but it sounded like the director or somebody involved in at a high level, I guess, had a history of doing maybe one of the Fast and Furious movies, but other car-related movies. And this one does look like it's going to have a car-centric theme. Now, I will say, there is a meteorologist. One of the cast members is a meteorologist. There's not a lot of big names in the film. Not a big surprise there. They're storm tracking car, if you will, looks to be pretty cool. I will say that looks intriguing. Some of the special effects make it look like they're trying to create weather that just isn't plausible or doesn't look all that real to me. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see. Another something for me to watch. And along those lines, I did go ahead and create an initial sort of playlist of trailers. Some of these are a little harder to find because newer movies, it's easy. Anything in the last 10 years, pretty much a trailer's out there available on YouTube or whatnot. Some of the older movies, well-known movies like Key Largo, right, was easy to find. Some of the ones like that Storm movie that I mentioned that had Luke Perry in it wasn't easy to find. So I've put an initial set, I think of right around 10, 9 or 10 or so, that you can go to whatisitabouttheweather.com/YouTube, and it'll redirect you to our YouTube page. And subscribe to that playlist. And I'm going to add to it over time. I didn't want this to kind of be a create it once and then walk away from it. It's just another chance for me to add things from time to time. So keep an eye on that. I think also, how could you not think of weather in the Winter Olympics? Certainly weather was impacting the Winter Olympics. But I must say, I think that I couldn't remember if the Summer Olympics have a sport like curling. And I think it should, because curling to me was a reminder that you don't have to be young, you don't have to be in perfect shape or these things to compete at a high level in a sport. And one of the things I like about it as a sport Is there a strategy involved? There's actually, I heard the guy, I was watching the gold medal match, not the gold medal match, I mean the semifinal match that would deliver one of the people to the final or gold medal match between the U.S. and Canada. And I heard somebody say, the physics of that shot don't work. And that's exactly, to me, what curling's like. There's a lot of strategy. And yeah, I know a lot of people would say it can just be a fun game and go and have some beers with friends and do that thing. And I think that's what's great about it, too. But it is proof that in so many things, there is science underlying this game. And I don't know. You know, as an older person, I like the idea that, you know, you don't have to be 20-something or even in your late teens to be good or at the peak of a sport, and that some sports like this, it's as much the experience and having done it for years that's important. We're in the final couple days. Actually, by the time you listen to this podcast, the Winter Olympics may be over. But I do know that for those of us here in the U.S., NBC has this stuff stored. A lot of the sports, you can go back and watch old videos. So, I don't know. If you've never watched curling, there is even a movie. I was trying to think what the name, I need to find the name of that movie and share it with you guys about curling that I'd watched before. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll mention that in the future. All right. Enough about my weather week. Actually, there was all sorts of stuff, and I'll mention something as we close out. But let's move into the main story about, did weather save my life? Now, those of you who know me or have listened to enough of the podcast know that I have as much as I love weather, I have a little bit of a love-hate relationship with certain aspects of the weather. Back in 2014, I was diagnosed with skin cancer, and not a trivial kind, but something that we were lucky to catch, and had some pretty major surgery, left me with my Zorro mark, as I call it, on the top of my head, pretty major surgery. Thankfully, a little over 3 years on now, I am NED or NSD for those that like to use those acronyms for stuff, but essentially means that currently there's no sign that the disease progressed in my system and it seems that we caught it. But as you can imagine, that left me pretty angry with the whole idea of sun and sunshine. And you shouldn't necessarily be angry. Now, you know, I've always been one who's like more what I would call active weather, whether it's rain or snow or storms of some kind. But it did kind of reframe how I view weather and left me with a little bit of underlying, I don't know, frustration or in certainly some days anger at this thing that had been so important to me, right? I had redefined my career. And actually that, you know, you could argue the counterpoint, you know, did it save my life? It helped me reinvigorate my career, allowed me to bring my technology background into a field I loved. And then you get this sort of thing, and it does. It kind of stops you in your tracks a little bit. And a lot of times here on the podcast, we hit some things, and they can have sort of, I don't want to say a negative connotation, but you view it about impacts. And a lot of times we think of impacts as negative, right? And certainly weather can do that. You know, mine's just an example. I'm certainly not the only person that's had to deal with skin cancer. But in a year like this, when people lost their lives and their homes and that sort of thing, you know, impacts, a lot of times people walk away with those negative connotations. But it doesn't have to be that way. So I wanted to take a moment and share an example, I guess, of maybe a way. And I'm going to do an episode next week that kind of hopefully touches on a little more positive aspect of weather impacts, because there are lots of them. There really are, right? But let's back up and talk a little bit about something else about Mark. You know, you get these from time to time, little tidbits. For those that know me, right, personally, they know I snore. And I don't mean just kind of snore. I mean, I snore, and I've snored for years. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that my nose is messed up, if you will, internally, not externally. It looks pretty normal, but internally, I have not a really good air path. And so I've always kind of been a mouth breather. right? And of course, that's also meant that at night, I'm a house rattler, if you will. Now, part of that, in anybody who's ever dealt with snoring knows that, you know, there are different things that cause it. Certainly any time that I've weighed more, and like many people, I've gone up and down in my weight over life. When I weigh more, I snore more. And that's been proven to happen. You just you end up with fat stores in your throat or whatever, and it makes snoring worse. But even when I lost some weight, and I did, I had a, what's called a sleep test, you know, 20-some-odd years ago. And when they do these sleep tests, they, you know, are kind of measuring what's going on in your body at night, what's happening. And my first approach to dealing with the problem was to lose some weight. And it made a difference. It actually made a huge difference in the amount of snoring that was occurring. Although it certainly didn't stop it. And what people still noticed, especially people like my wife, was despite the fact that maybe I wasn't snoring as loudly or as much as I used to, I would still occasionally seemingly stop breathing during the night. So let's move forward 20-some-odd years. It's now 2016, and I had put off dealing with this thing. It's like a lot of us in states and ages of our lives that we just kind of ignore certain things because it's been a part of us for a long time. Whether you could deal with it or not, it's been part of us. And the technology had also changed a little bit. New things had come out, including an easier way to do these sleep tests. Now, traditionally, you go and you do these sleep tests. You go to a center. You're sleeping in, you know, it's kind of like going to a hotel, except it's not because they're hooking you up with all sorts of wires and stuff. And this test now, they can send you a little thing, and you hook it up at home, and you do it yourself. Usually, they can get enough information. A lot of times with these tests is a lot of things. It's not maybe not quite as thorough or as complete, but it's good enough. So I was able to retest and see where I was. Again, a little older, put some weight back on. Enough where it was impacting things. Now, for those that don't deal with sleep apnea or snoring or have never had the idea of what it really means, it can create some different things. What for most people that get to where it's problematic, the things they probably notice tend to be things like morning headaches, potentially, but probably the number one thing is just being sleepy. Sleepy, you know, you might be in the afternoon and just want to take a nap. Or something potentially more dangerous, right? You're doing something where you shouldn't be sleepy, but those are the things that you tend to notice. But one of the other things it can do is it can freak people out around you, right? Anybody who sees you stop breathing knows that that's not normal. You know, you go from snoring, all of a sudden there's no noise. And you don't seem to be moving. And then a lot of times it's often followed by a big gasp or something because your body kind of pops back in and says, let me do something about this. And there are real risks with that. You know, at first you go, okay, it's an inconvenience, particularly for those around you. I mean, if you're dealing with it and you're not, let's say you're not getting headaches, yeah, you may not want to be as sleepy as you are. But what are the real risks that, you know, it's just other than the inconvenience factor, if you will. But probably first and foremost in that is what it's doing to your heart, oddly enough. It can change your blood pressure profile, which we know is kind of an underlying dangerous thing. And it can just lead to heart disease. So quite frankly, what it's believed to do is shorten your life. Because it's taxing your heart and taking years off your life when you're not dealing with it. That's probably the biggest risk for people. And again, it may not kill you instantly. But what if you didn't think about it this way? What if for every day you let sleep apnea go on, you were taking a day off the end of your life? That's pretty meaningful. Now, I don't know that that's exactly how it translates. But I do know that basically what it causes your heart to do is your heart has to work significantly harder when it's sleeping. It should be able to, you know, take it easy, and it's having that impact. Additionally, for me, and while this symptom's not as common, it is real for a certain percentage of people that deal with sleep apnea, And that is reflux or acid issues. So I even got to the point where more or less the strength of me recovering, if you will, from when I went into an apnea and stopped breathing and then started breathing again, is I'm pulling stomach acid out of my stomach through this strong surge into my throat. And even at times, eventually into my lung, because, you know, you're laying down, and once you pull it out of your stomach, it's kind of sitting there in your throat and can seep into the lungs. And that can cause all sorts of complications in terms of the risk for throat cancers or other throat-related illnesses. And the impact that ultimately I had in terms of stuff was getting into my lungs and the inflammation and problems it was causing in my lungs. And you get back to that sleepiness thing, and quite frankly, if you put aside the individual health for a moment, but if you're driving a car, and anybody who's ever driven a car and has been sleepy or has fallen asleep knows the risk that poses, not just for yourself, but for others in the car with you and those around you, it's a real big concern. So while it may itself not kill you instantly, it's leading to all sorts of things that can. Now, 20 years ago, part of the problem of dealing with this was the only real option at the time, let's say early 90s, late 80s, was pretty major surgery. And maybe you know somebody who's had it. Think of it, you know, anybody that's ever had their tonsils out, which I haven't, can probably relate to it. I mean, they basically are taking stuff out of the back of your throat. The idea being, you open it up, remove some of the stuff that might be vibrating around. Now, there's two things that have happened since that time, though. We have moved beyond the age where we just take stuff out for the sake of taking it out, which I think is a good thing. We're starting to learn that even though we may think certain things aren't necessarily useful, that they may actually serve a purpose, or just altering the body in general for the sake of altering the body can cause other problems. And I know some people who had the surgery, and the challenge quite often with the surgery, and I'm not saying it hasn't gotten better since then in terms of the techniques used, is that you still develop more kind of tissue, whether it's fat or other things, in your throat that can cause the problem to start all over again. So you think you've resolved it, and maybe you've gotten some things, rid of some things that contribute to the problem, but it still may not stop it. But another thing happened, kind of, you know, very end of the 80s, early 90s, so around that same time, was a device was invented that's called a CPAP. Now that's CPAP. It's four initials. And of course it's an acronym. And you're saying, but Mark, what's the acronym mean? So CPAP stands for continuous positive airway pressure. Now there's your kind of hint where we might be going with the weather connection. But what does it do? Okay, so essentially what this thing does is it makes sure that your airway has kind of a constant pressure level in it. And the idea being when we fall asleep, our neck muscles relax and our throat relaxes and all this tissue, that's how it becomes loose. But even if we're asleep, if we put some pressure on it, it keeps all that stuff from becoming so loosey-goosey. Now, dealing with the snoring is part of it, but probably more importantly, though, is we want to make sure that things aren't collapsing to the point where we stop breathing, because that's really what sleep apnea is. It is a step beyond just snoring. If someone's just snoring, yeah, there's an annoyance, but sleep apnea really means that things close down enough where our body can, at its normal state, take in air, and that's where the apnea occurs. And they measure people by, you know, how many of these events you have happened in an hour or whatever. And I will tell you that my number was like the equivalent of one a minute or more. So essentially, you know, I would be jolted out of having an event. I'd get a breath in, and then my body would go right back to not being able to breathe. So the goal is to try to eliminate those. So this device pressurizes the system, and there's different ways to do it. Me being a mouth breather, I wear a different device than somebody who actually breathes freely through their nose. But the whole idea is it pushes enough air in there, in your body, to do it. Now, one of the challenges, however, is the original devices were like set at one level, right? There was, you know, you got so much pressure, and it was just throwing it in there at you. However, most of the devices now, okay, have an ability to adjust, right? It's recognized that maybe how much pressure you need is not consistent, or maybe when you go into an apnea event or you got far enough along that you were having one, you need a little more pressure, but the rest of the time, maybe not so much. Maybe you can keep yourself out of them. But in any case, so they have these adjustable numbers, and in theory, it adjusts through the night. That's a whole nother podcast. I can talk about how well that works. But in case, there were numbers. 4 to 20 is what they write on the prescription pad, and you can see it on your device. Most of them come preset to this range. But what did that 4 to 20 mean? You know, it's great. So level 4, level 20. But that intrigued me a little bit. But before I answer that question, let's back up a little bit and talk about pressure. And specifically, atmospheric pressure. Now, in the mid-1600s, a dude by the name of Evangelista Torricelli, and I'm sure I'm butchering that horribly and trying to do it right. I do a bad Italian accent, but it's something along those lines. He was doing work with Galileo, another name you might know. And the dude figured out the way to measure atmospheric pressure, called the barometer, and recognized that pressure wasn't constant, that it was changing. Now, the original need for atmospheric pressure wasn't necessarily about understanding the weather, if you will, but it was trying to formalize an understanding of a theory. You know, we've talked about Aristotle and his role. Even he thought that air weighed something, if you will, although it wasn't a very popular opinion in his day. But as people came around to it, and these, you know, whether it was Torricelli or Galileo or somebody else around those times, there was this general recognition that if it didn't, it would be easier to pump water and move water, and they were having trouble doing that. So it had to be something, and logic, you know, with gravity and everything else, that air would weigh something too, as odd as that kind of seems to some. Heck, even Geostorm, that horrible movie from last week, they understood the importance of pressure and how important it is to weather and winds and all those sort of things. And I will put a link in the show notes to a nice write-up where you can understand the role of pressure. Because it is one of, if you look at kind of the key elements, you know, we go back to Aristotle and, you know, these old beliefs of earth, wind, and fire and all these common elements. But if you look at meteorology, I mean, we do very fundamentally look at things like temperature and pressure and humidity. There's some very core tenets of what we do, and pressure is one of them. Atmospheric pressure is one of them. But there was also this understanding that one of the reasons that air doesn't crush us is we also have air inside of us that creates this same pressure outward, creates a balance. So you can imagine how this device that creates this consistent or constant internal airway pressure is attached to atmospheric pressure. So in the mid-1600s, we get this idea of there's actually a way to measure and understand this. And as quintessential as it would be to improving our knowledge about weather and understanding weather, it also had other purposes, right? Now let's talk about the CPAP machine a little bit for a moment and understand it, that sleep studies like the ones I talked about probably started back in the 1950s, probably didn't go down exactly the same way, because technology wasn't there. But in the 1980s, a doctor by the name of Colin Sullivan was studying this stuff and the idea of creating this pressure. Now, first he worked with dogs. I feel bad. I didn't know dogs were big snorers. I've heard some snore. But it would be a patient who refused a surgery. And I'm sure the surgery was probably seemed pretty major for the day. Was looking to find out if there was some other way they could deal with this problem. And hence the CPAP was born. He'd be the first of many. By the mid-1980s, you know, it was starting to be used and tested on multiple patients. And by the, you know, the 90s, we would start to get these devices. And I think the unit I have, it's, you know, it's now out of patent stage or whatever, is made by the company who created the original one of these devices for, you know, commercial release. And so I'm on version 10 or whatever, just to give you how many. It's no different than phones today. You go through iterations and they get better. For instance, mine has a way to add humidity into it, which is important to me because I had tried it without it and it really dried me out. So that is an important piece of it. But it's particularly interesting that the whole idea of what's become a CPAP was really born out of our understanding and ability to measure atmospheric pressure. And on the heels of the invention of the barometer, another scientist named Robert Boyle did a lot of pressure change experiments. And again, he was looking at different things, not necessarily all human-related things. But he did recognize and understand, or come to understand, that atmospheric pressure was key to human breathing, right? So for centuries, we've known this. But with the technology we have today, we were finally able to leverage atmospheric pressure in a way to improve health and save lives. But let's get back to that 4 to 20 number I was telling you about, because it's kind of the final link in the chain. So it happens that the 4 to 20 is a representation of CmH2O, to give you another acronym. Now you can probably figure out the H2O water, right? But it has to do with centimeters. That's what the CM is for. Now, this is more of a medical way to measure something than I was used to, and that kind of threw me off. Again, this is why this whole kind of chain of events underwent a progression in my brain, if you will. But it's more or less the equivalent of millibars or hectopascals, which I'm very used to with atmospheric pressure. Not exactly the same way. Not exactly. And it really is, it's a weird thing. It's actually has to do with fluid in the brain and stuff. But I'll give the medical community their little way of looking at it. It's not a standard unit by my standards. But in short, our confirmation of atmospheric pressure and the evolution not only in understanding how it impacts weather and how key it is to weather, but also in how it applies into other aspects of our lives, would be quintessential to me being healthier today than I would be without it. So how about you? Has weather impacted your life in some way? And it doesn't have to be positive. I'd like to hear positive stories. But in some way that has been a change and an influence in how you do something differently now, even if it was a negative, maybe how you do something to stay safe. I don't know. Let me know. What is it about the weather @gmail.com or whatisitabouttheweather.com/contact. Now, I had a question come in about something that's not related to weather at all, but I thought you might find it interesting. And that has to do with something called VBR versus CBR. And this is just how This audio that I create is ultimately encoded for you into an MP3. And these are different techniques that came out when it was a little more important to have little tiny file sizes. Don't get hung up in it, but know that I was trying a different encoding technique. And the problem with that encoding technique is it's not very good at knowing exactly how long a file is going to be. So somebody asked why the podcast ended up lasting, let's say, 27 minutes, even though their little thing said it was going to be 25. Well, if you've ever experienced that in listening to a podcast or anything else, it's probably because this variable rate was used. And I'm switching back to constant rate. It doesn't seem to make a big difference. And hopefully it'll make the time on the marker the same as what you experience. All right. Let you get on with your week. And may it have a weather influence. May it have a way that weather touches your life, and hopefully in a positive way, or in a way that makes you pause to think about how to be more safe, secure, or healthy. Because as we all know, there's much more to weather than the weather itself.
This is Two White Sofa Production.
We're tired of hearing our uncle grovel, so please support him on patreon.com/weather.